Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Carl Nordgren. You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius on the best radio station in the state of North Carolina, 97.9 The Hill, WCHL. I'm so happy to be part of this community. I just really, really love the folks here. I'm in the studio with my dog, Flicka. She's been coming in with me regularly now. I'm actually petting her as I'm talking to you all. This, I think, is somewhere right around show number 140. That's a little over 3 years worth of shows. And about every 6 months, I have returned to the topic that I'm going to share with you today. I've been doing this work for about 25 years, and very early on in those 25 years, I came across four creative behaviors, and they've stood the test of time. I think I know what number five and number six would be, but boy, these four that I'm going to share with you, I believe, are really, you know, sort of cornerstones to the work that I do. In fact, the first one that I'm going to mention is the very first idea, the very first concept that I came up with when Duke asked me to teach classes there, and that is the concept of being generous. There's no doubt in my mind that the behavior of being generous has multiple creative benefits for you. First of all, there's just that basic human quality that when you're generous with somebody, their inclination is to want to be generous in return with you. And isn't that a wonderful creative dynamic, that people being generous with each other? I was really excited about the concept of being generous before it hit me that the word generous and the word generative are basically the same word. In fact, I've just checked and they come from the same Latin root. So being generous is generative. When you're generous with folks, when you're generous with the world around you, you're generating wonderful, creative, useful energy. When I teach the topic of being generous, especially when I'm teaching it to entrepreneurs, I will say something like the following. Why would the marketplace be any more generous with your company than you are with the marketplace? And I learned by helping launch a whole lot of cellular telephone companies where we were really very generous with the market, and we would have dominant market shares because of our generous approach to the marketplace. Another point I will make is, why would employees be any more generous with the company than the company is with their employees? And in these experiences that I had building these cellular telephone companies, we were very generous with our employees. We provided them with all the resources we could, and boy, oh boy, they brought their very best back to us. There's research that shows that the folks that come up with the best creative ideas, the most original and the most practically applicable ideas, are the folks that have got the best social capital networks, the folks that have got networks that are diverse, where lots of folks out there thinking about them, bringing to them ideas and opportunity. Well, the best way to build your social capital network is by being generous. When you're generous with your friends and your associates and your colleagues, you've got this network that wants to be generous in return. And boy, what a wonderful creative tool that is. Be generous with yourself. Be generous with your ideas. You know, the Beat Poets used to have something like, you know, first thought, best thought. And sometimes that is true. But you want to be generous with your thinking, right? You want to be expansive with your thinking. And so there is a place to express your generosity, is with your own idea generation. I don't know if you can hear Flicka licking water in the background here. One more place for you to be generous is in your listening. I believe that these days the greatest gift we can give each other is our undivided attention. We live in such a distracted state so very, very frequently, don't you appreciate it when somebody is actually listening to you, is being generous with their attention? And I'll go on, you know, beyond that to say, you know, be generous in your hearing of what people are sharing with you. Be appreciative. Listen for the very best of what somebody is sharing with you. And when you have a generous appreciation for what is being shared with you, isn't it most likely that the first comments that you'll make in reply to that idea come from that same generous place? So being generous is one of the four creative behaviors. The second is humility, to be humble. When the whole world is changing and we don't know what's going on out in the world, to be able to embrace that, accept that with a humble mind, and to understand that there's a lot of questions that one is going to have to ask about what's going on. When you're starting a new project, to understand that the most important things that you're going to need to know when you start a new project, you don't know at the beginning of the project. So you have to have the humility of being able to set aside this knowledge that you think you've accumulated. Don't fall prey to what is it called, epistemological arrogance, to think that the most important things to know are the things that you already know. No, in a rapidly changing world, or when you're working on a project, you don't know what it is you need to know. So you have to have the capacity for humility, to be able to ask questions, to be able to say to somebody, I don't know, I wonder what you think about what's going on here. There's a great story about humility. I'll start it here in this segment. I'll finish it up in the next segment that has to do with a decision that Christopher Wren made. Christopher Wren is often considered the foremost architect in British history. He was a contemporary of Sir Isaac Newton. He wasn't just an architect, Sir Christopher Wren. He was also a physicist. He was also an astronomer. He was somebody that I mentioned, Isaac Newton, you know, that Isaac Newton would come to bounce ideas off of him. So he was a man of great knowledge, of great wisdoms across a series of domains. And he was asked to be the architect, the designer, and the builder of the Windsor Guildhall that was going to be constructed. And because he, again, was a physicist, he was on the cutting edge of knowledge in load management. The Windsor Guildhall was going to be and is this massive, massive meeting space, and at the time meant that there had to be a lot of interior columns to hold the roof up, which meant that a lot of the space in the Windsor Guildhall was dedicated to columns. The sight lines weren't going to be as good. And so Sir Christopher Wren gave a radical new plan for building this Windsor Guildhall, and I'll tell you about that radical plan when you come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Carl Nordgren, Exploring Your Creative Genius. In this episode, I'm talking about the four creative behaviors that I've been sharing with people for nearly 25 years now as I've done this work of helping people grow their creative and their entrepreneurial qualities. I talked about generosity in the first segment, how being generous is generative. I just introduced the concept of humility as the second creative behavior, and talked about Sir Christopher Wren, the great architect, the great British architect, and he's been asked to submit plans to build the Windsor Guildhall. And in his plan, because again, he has this knowledge beyond most architects' knowledge about load management, he sends in plans, he submits plans that called for many fewer interior columns than the conventional thought at the time would have called for. Well, status quo being as powerful as it is, the suits being as often short-sighted as they are, the folks who were responsible, who were sponsoring, who were funding the Windsor Guildhall's construction, thought this was just too much for them. They sent the plans back to Sir Christopher Wren and asked him to resubmit a plan because they wanted his name on the project to resubmit a plan with sort of the standard number of columns. And he did. He submitted that plan. The Windsor Guildhall was built with those additional columns that he didn't think were necessary. And about 100 years go by. And it's time for the first significant interior cleaning and renovation of the Windsor Guildhall. And so the scaffolding is getting higher and it's getting higher as the work is going on. And then finally, when the scaffolding is high enough that the workmen can see at the very top of these columns, they discover that the columns that Sir Christopher Wren said weren't necessary, there's an inch gap between the top of the column and the ceiling. The columns that Christopher Wren's initial plans weren't there, weren't part of the plan, the columns that he's been asked to add to get the project, there's an inch gap between the top of those columns and the ceiling, which is so friggin' cool. But where the humility comes from is that he didn't tell anybody. Right, he didn't wait for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years to go by, and him, and be it the obvious proof that those columns weren't necessary because the building hasn't fallen down. He didn't stand on a soapbox at that point in time and say, "Hey, I told you these columns weren't necessary." Instead, he went to his deathbed with this as his secret. Presumably, the people who worked on the project with him knew it, but he never embraced this. Right, he never bragged on this. He never claim to the world the how smart he was. Certainly, he took the knowledge that he gained from that project and applied it in subsequent projects. But what a wonderful example of creative humility. I just love telling that story about Sir Christopher Wren. The third of the four creative behaviors, first is generosity, the second is humility, the third is to be playful. And there's just so many ways that we can play with the idea of being playful. Let's talk about a couple of those. First of all, you learn better when you have a playful attitude about what you're trying to learn, right? When you bring a playful approach to acquiring new knowledge, to exploring new ideas, if you bring some playful view to that, you learn better. You retain the new knowledge more effectively. Presumably, when you're being playful, you're likely to have a very different perspective on what you're looking at than you would if you were looking at it seriously. And you want to have a good idea, have lots of ideas. You want to have a good perspective, have lots of perspectives. So if you're playing with the work that you're doing, you're not going to be in any hurry, right? You're not going to just grab hold of the first idea that comes along. No, you're having fun, and so you're going to generate more and more ideas. And this playful approach, looking at what other people are looking at, makes it more likely that you're going to see what other people don't see because you're looking at it playfully. We need to make sure that our children play. I've been revisiting the Torrance creativity tests here lately. The Torrance creativity test began in the 60s. It's the preeminent longitudinal study of creative IQ. And while all other measures of IQ, all other IQ tests, it seems like every decade the scores get higher and higher and higher. That's called the Flynn effect. The social scientists who realized that this was true, that decade after decade for most IQ tests, the scores rise every decade. The Torrance score has been in decline for quite some period of time now. And the decline began before the Torrance. Let me take one more backup step here. This Torrance creativity test focuses specifically on measuring the creativity of children. And since the mid-60s when it started, I think they've got over 250,000 children that they have that have gone through the Torrance assessments. And so the decline that began to show up in the Torrance test began before you can blame it on digital technology, right? Before digital technology took over childhood, the decline began before that. I was wondering about that. I was curious about that. And what I can associate this decline with is the decline of children engaged in open-ended play. Our children's lives now are so managed for them, so managed by their parents. For, you know, they go to school, and then when they come home from school, they've got lessons to go to. They've got practices to go to. You know, we've got their lives so tightly orchestrated that they don't have much time to just get out and play. And there's all kinds of research that shows that that open-ended play, when children are playing a game that they're making up in the moment, right? When I used to, you know, be a more active entrepreneur, often the partners and I would talk about, oh, wow, being an entrepreneur is like learning how to fly the airplane as you're building it, as you're designing it, right? It's all happening at once. Well, that's what open-ended play is. You're figuring out the game you're going to play as you begin to play it. Right? You're making up the rules for the game as you play the game. And children's opportunity to engage in open-ended play really fell off the table in terms of the amount of hours that they engage in open-ended play somewhere back in the 80s. And it is associated with a generation of parents that wanted more than any other generation of parents to be parents. And one of the ways that greater desire to be parents expressed itself was by being the talent manager, right? Finding an interest that Susie has, finding an interest that Bob has, and then build a schedule around that interest so that the children are engaged in activities designed to help improve their abilities in that area. In and of itself, not so very terrible, but if time and time again that's what they're doing is being scheduled and being put in scheduled programs, the opportunity to play, to not only develop their imaginations, but research shows that open-ended play also helps children develop executive control, right? Because I have to be a good citizen with my friends if they're going to continue to play with me. We'll talk a little bit more about play when we get back and also hit the fourth behavior. Come on back after the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Carl Nordgren. This episode has been a reintroduction for some of you, perhaps an initial introduction for others, of the four creative behaviors that I've been using as part of my teaching for the last 25 years or so, helping people grow their creative capacities. We've talked about generosity, how being generous is so wonderfully generative. We talked about humility, about how at the beginning of an important project, the most important things that you need to know, you don't know. So it takes a humble attitude to set your knowledge aside and be ready to ask questions about what's going on here. That's going to be so important as we're moving into this unknowable future. We've talked about the importance of play, and I focused on open-ended play. I focused on how important it is that our children are engaged in open-ended play. You and I should be engaged in open-ended play as well. It's fun, right? Sometimes I forget when I'm talking about the importance of play to stress just the refreshing quality of having fun, right? We should be having fun wherever we possibly can. And I sure have fun engaged in open-ended play. I'm usually doing it with my grandchildren. I'm not usually doing open-ended play with other adults, but I'm getting the benefit of us making up the game as we're laughing and having fun with it. And the one that I want to introduce to you now is the fourth is to be enthusiastic in your pursuit of beauty. This one changed. When I first went out into the world sharing these four qualities, it was just simply be enthusiastic. And I'm an enthusiast. I love being enthusiastic, expressing my enthusiasm. That's part of my makeup. But after sharing it with a few folks, one day somebody raised their hand and said, yeah, well, help me out here. Be enthusiastic about what? About what? And I thought, okay, I've not yet really claimed beauty in this matrix of content that I was beginning to pull together. So how about this? How about let the fourth behavior be enthusiastic? Be enthusiastic in your pursuit of beauty. And I'm agnostic about what you think of when you think of beauty. Is it the most beautiful sunset that you can imagine? Is it a wonderful painting of sunflowers by Van Gogh? Is it a great piece of music by Joni Mitchell? Whatever you think is beautiful, embrace that and be enthusiastic in your pursuit of it. There's so many benefits that occur when you're enthusiastic in your pursuit of beauty, so many creative benefits that occur. First of all, we, of course, have a good understanding about how important it is to refresh our digital devices. We know they're going to operate better when they've been refreshed occasionally. We know that to download new apps, we'll often have to refresh our digital devices. Well, do we lose sight sometimes of how important it is, and I'm pounding, tapping my chest right now, to be mindful of being refreshing this device, right? Your device, that device being you, you need to be refreshed. And is there anything more refreshing than just to be in the presence of, not analyzing it, not considering it, just being present to, just beholding that which you consider to be beautiful? What a great refresh that is. And it also serves your creative capacity in the following fashion. That beauty is going to be made up of forms, made up of textures, made up of rhythms, made up of patterns, made up of colors, made up of shapes. And as you're beholding that beauty, as you're just being present to it, your subconscious mind, man, it's taking all those shapes, all those patterns in and storing it away, and they're ready there now. That's more stuff that you get to call on in your subconscious, in your intuitive, creative thinking. And that's what happens when you're just present to that which is beautiful. I like to remind folks of the simplest creativity, the tip that I can, because it's so very, very effective. I've mentioned this in most of my shows, but let me just remind you one more time. Please stare at the color green a couple of times a day. Stare at it for 30 seconds at a time. Really meditate on the color green a couple of times a day. Research out of the University of Munich determined that when you stare at the color green, well, their participants, when they stared at the color green, had a 25% improvement in their performance over four really very different creative exercises. Four creative exercises that called on four very different creative cognitive processes. So do yourself a huge favor. I went out the day I learned about that research and bought myself a bunch of green folders from the local business supply store a couple of times a day. Just take 30 seconds, calm yourself down, and contemplate green. Do it again later in the day. It's taken a whole minute of your life. You're so much more creative. Plus, you've reminded yourself how important it is to be creative. Folks, I hope you have a great week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.